Pickaxe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oi, what's the best game where you get to eat pie? What's the best game where you play a dead guy? Aye?
You'll find out on VG247's podcast.
This looks boring.
What are you on about?
It looks great. All of their games, they look boring.
It doesn't look boring. It looks like you're an assassin on the Isle of Man.
But it doesn't have the kind of wow.
The steampunk quail-based economy is incredible.
Yeah, it's boring.
VG247's Best Games Ever podcast is ostensibly a show about figuring out what the best game in a weirdly specific category is, but it's actually just about petty arguments. You should listen to it. It's good.
Is that it? That's the whole promo?
Yeah, I was just doing
And that's supposed to make people subscribe, is it?
Yes.
Okay, good luck with that.
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Hatchet Podcast, episode, who knows,
159? I got the numbers.
We're counting. Today is a very special one. First of all, we'll announce who we are, of course. I'm Chris Trott.
I'm Ross Ombi. That guy's
crazy. No, no,
I was waiting for you.
The guest comes in last every time.
Fuck me. I'm Alex Smith, and I'm also here.
And I'm Simon Clark. You may know me as Doctor Simon.
Yeah,
Clark.
Doctor. Don't miss the Doctor.
That title.
Yeah,
4 years of academy training wasted. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you've got to use it.
How long ago was that now for you?
I graduated in 2018. I finished in 2017.
Oh, okay. When did we graduate? 2011.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think you were the year above me at school.
And also, our courses probably weren't anywhere near as long as an actual.
Well, what was wild is like I went back to. I gave a talk this week at Oxford, and I realised it was more than 10 years since I'd been an undergrad there.
Oh man,
holy crap!
That was like.
Do you have to do regular? So it's a PhD, right? So do you have to do regular publishings as well, or is that something?
No,
does that depend on?
No. You just as long as you've got written a thesis, you've been examined,
right?
And
okay.
They're happy to give you the title. You keep it.
Oh,
there are plenty of people who later in life probably should have it.
Yeah,
I will probably be one of them.
I've got a friend who has to regularly publish, so I'm not sure if it's a different category. But is it an English PhD? So maybe it's different.
I mean, to be relevant within academia, you have to publish. It's publish or perish.
Oh, okay.
There's actually a lot of parallels
publish
between
publish or perish. Wow.
Yeah, okay, that's what they mean.
What do they do? So the academics come and just beat you to death if you don't publish something.
You just can't get funding. You just stand up on the streets.
So you starve.
Well, it's like being a YouTuber.
It's a slow death.
It's literally you have to make videos. You publish or perish. There's not really any job security. You turn yourself into a commodity.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of overlap between being a YouTuber and being an academic.
Speaking of that, then. You know, obviously, you've been in our videos before. You've made us eat our own salt.
Right here.
Yeah, we fed it to people in the audience.
But just in case, if you want to, like, summarise your entire person, who you are.
Who are you? Yeah, you've been on it before. That was a while ago, wasn't it?
You're a doctor come YouTuber.
So I am a recovering academic, is how I like it.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I did a PhD in atmospheric physics, and alongside my degree, I started making videos about climate and about what my research was about, and that became my full-time job. After I graduated, I took the leap, started doing it full-time, and that's been the case for now the past 7 years. Mostly videos about climate. There's a couple of other random bits and bobs in there. Do some gaming stuff.
Okay. You met Ross at an airport, right?
I met all of you at an airport. It was Glasgow.
Were we all there?
Yeah, we were there.
No, not Glasgow. So it was flying back from Edinburgh. You have come back from Glasgow, I think. At Bristol Airport.
Bristol Airport, yeah.
I still have the picture on my phone.
Was it the Witcher 3 thing?
Yes, it would have been.
Yeah.
Because
oh,
I was up
God.
There for a stag do, and I bumped into you at the
right.
airport, and I was just like, oh my God, this is the coolest day ever.
And then we were dressed as people characters from The Witcher. I was a pauper and...
Well,
you
were a lady.
A lovely lady.
Oh, was it Tom Clark girl, was with you and you just got hideously drunk?
Threw up in his suitcase, yeah.
Wait, was that that time? That was a different
Tom
time.
Tom threw up in your suitcase.
That was when we were in a different place, I think, wasn't it? That was Cologne. Or was it somewhere else?
No, that was Scotland.
Oh, you threw up in yours? Oh, okay. I thought that was...
No, you're right. It was a different place because in Scotland, we were singing Drunkly Scotland the Brave so loudly that a guy came out in his pants next door to us and went, for fuck's sake, lads, really? And then at that moment, I realised it was 2 a.m. I was really drunk and we were being really loud in the hotel.
Yes, I remember that video.
And it was just one of those moments where I'm just like, why didn't I think about other people probably not
finding we were dressed up.
Well, we also got told that the whole hotel had been rented for the event.
Right.
Which was not true by the look on that man's face. I didn't see him at the feast. And he looked like he was going to kill me.
Yeah. So it was like being in The Witcher.
Yeah.
Constant death.
So that was a long time ago. Geralt.
Yeah, because then I came in and, God, what did we do? We've worked on a couple of videos on your channel. Yeah.
Obviously, the most memorable is you making us run around Queen Square so that you could take our sweat in a sponge. You take it home with you and then get
boil it
salt.
Isolate the salt. Yeah. Worked out who had the most salt and then we saw who tasted the best on
the tastiest.
You did that in your
crisps.
Parents' kitchen, right?
Okay, the fuck
you
up
boiled
thing
off
is,
your our sweat.
And so I bought a pan specifically for that video and I have forgotten which pan it is. So we have been cooking with that probably.
Anything that comes off this pan is so tasty.
Yeah.
That's like
human MSG.
Pepperoni Domino's sweat. It's delicious.
Yeah. Bit of soap and water's fine.
Now, we don't often get the opportunity to have a doctor of atmospheric science on our podcast, and usually we just throw facts back and forth like we know what we're talking about.
Well, I don't think we say we
but
know
we got
what
some,
we're talking about.
We got
just
some,
say it.
We got some burning questions.
Okay.
From not only us, but our audience as well. Who wants to start? Who's got some burning questions for a doctor?
So two things. I obviously have some questions. And secondly, at the end of this, I want to do one. It's not funny news, but I think it's really good talking point news.
Is it
sad? So I think you'll find it's not sad. It's
is it bleak?
It's
is it
like
boring?
True crime. It's like a true crime thing. Okay? So it's a bit of a mystery. It's sad because somebody did die, but like I was reading about it again the other day. It was something that came a few years ago, and I was reading about it again, and I just thought this would be a great thing to talk to you guys about. So at the end of this, I want
to
do one section.
So everyone has to listen to the end now.
So you've got to listen
that's
to the
how you
end.
Hook him in.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done this
that's
before.
That's a good strategy. That's a good strategy.
I mean, go ahead. I did do a quick check of the emails a minute ago for any questions specifically for you, but a lot of people have thought they've been really funny, and they've done stuff like, how do fish hold their breath for so long?
Yeah.
Several people did that, and they've clearly copied and pasted them from somewhere as well. So I really reflect on yourselves, guys, because...
You can't use AI for everything.
The creator one's pretty funny, though. Why do
yeah,
we
no,
sure
I didn't see that. Go ahead.
Always land in craters.
Yeah, what? Well, yeah.
Fuck's sake.
Thanks, Crumb.
Yeah. Someone's watched Tenet.
Yeah. are children all actually small or are they just far away? Do you need a doctor to answer that question?
Yeah, my dad, I think
they're just far away.
I don't know. My daughter could just be really far away when I try and put her to bed. Yeah.
So when you say you understand atmospherics, I presume you would understand or presume a way to put data into an aerosol. So we were describing.
Oh, yeah, the data.
We were describing a few podcasts ago what we would do in a bunker, how we would like let people in, how we would rate them.
Okay, yeah, we've all been there. Yeah.
Trot started talking about rating people's farts, which we initially thought was because obviously you don't want to be in a bunker for a long time with people who are terrible.
No, well, can I apply context to that?
I think that's a perfectly legit concern. Yeah.
That wasn't what he meant. He meant a different thing. He was like, you know, I want to see if I can like learn something about them. Was that it? Or like
farts tell a lot about a person.
Right. I see. Right.
Like, if they've got a weird diet. Yep. It's like, is that going to cause like behavioral issues? You know, are they going to eat all of our food supplies? That sort of thing. Can't always tell from face value what's going on biologically, but I think from internal farts coming external, you could learn a lot if you train.
And then that's when I thought, could you put data in an aerosol?
Thoughts?
Okay. Right. Ones and zeros.
Okay, yeah, so you could definitely learn something about somebody from their farts. Absolutely. Because there's two components to it, right? You've got the gas component, which
is... Which part of your thesis is this?
it's probably somewhere in the background.
should we be taking notes?
You've got the gas components, like methane is one of the things that makes your farts smell. But you've also got particulate matter.
Bits
of your insides that are then wafting through. So within that, you're going to have information about chemically...
How much particulate matter do you think there is?
How much is normal? Fart?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'm not saying that should be the next video we do because I don't even know if I want that.
If you're like a spectrometer or something like that, how would you do that?
You probably pass it through a series of filters, right? So you catch the PM1, PM2.
I was thinking just sniffing butts.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So if let's say we unwrapped a brand new one of those, you know, I don't know, Dyson fan things that sucks up. You know, they've got like a filtration thing at the bottom.
Yeah.
If we got a brand new one of those, HEPA filter, and we all just fucking let loose into it. We all fart into that thing.
And you swapped it.
And then it's just, because it gives you like a grading list of like how much plastic. It may not be as detailed as
then, like you could at least gauge the PM2.5.
Yeah. We could get the small, tiny matter and see if we really are breathing in little bits of poo.
What size do you think they would be on average?
That sounds like a biology question. I'm honestly not sure.
Well, so pollen, is that PM2.5 or thereabouts, or is it huge range?
Yeah, it's about that. Because like, well, PM2.5 is the one that's really bad for you.
Right.
Like, PM2.5 kills.
Oh, that's like the stuff that.
So it's some of it's natural. So some of it's fine windblown dust. Some of it's sea salt crystals. A lot of it comes from burning fossil fuels.
Right.
So coal specifically kills about 7 million people a year.
So even if there was no fossil fuels being burned, would salt crystals and other things still have a negative effect on people?
Yeah. So there was a paper that came out just before COP that basically said if you stop burning fossil fuels, you'd save about 5 million lives a year.
Yeah.
Because there's that, there is a natural component to PM2.5.
So do people live on the people living on the coast have been negatively affected by sea salt crystals?
I think they can be. I think it's more the
should we be worried about going to the seaside?
Wow.
It was nice. Now they're trying to take summer holidays away from us.
I'm biased because I have a phobia of crabs. So
I fucking hate crabs too.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
very
fucking
sensible.
Weird, man.
Decapods, man. Yeah. They shouldn't have
the
that many
that
legs.
About?
Why do they have weapons built into them?
Insects are weird enough. Don't make them like that.
Insects, I'm like, that's fine. But 10 legs,
is it the little ones that you're worried about?
Just all crabs.
Crabs are creepy, but like, it was when I, because in the Natural History Museum in Oxford, they had a Japanese spider crab. Which they can grow to be like 3 meters across.
Scary fuckers.
Oh, shit.
Like, these things are enormous.
Holy
I think
crap.
That's just
that's scary. That is scary.
So I don't want to go to the beach anyway.
Yeah,
but now you can blame it on the sea
salt crystals.
Yeah, that's why I don't want to go to the beach.
So,
just trying to save my life, thank you. It's not the crabs. Yeah.
So it does, what does it do?
It gets in your lungs and it basically gets into your bloodstream. The reason that the PM2.5, so 2.5 is how many microns across it.
Yeah.
And that basically, at that size, it can get past the blood barrier. And that means that it can then pass up to your brain. So it can cause strokes, it can cause heart disease.
Shit.
Lots of things.
That's pretty bad.
Which is one of the reasons why we should stop burning fossil fuels. Kind of a big health reason why we shouldn't do it.
Well, on the, devil's advocate,
gone.
Sure. Population's out of control in it, so
should we be controlling
off 5 million? It's probably not a bad thing. Is
Thanos
it?
Has entered the chat. I don't see a downside to this logic.
Is it worse?
I can't just make twice as many resources
in a plastic bowl. Isn't there supposed to be a load of like tiny microplastics in just one bottle, or has that not been proven fully?
That was a study recently that was.
Is
like,
that worse for you, or does that just
because
we're just gonna have all this inside us?
But the thing, right? Okay, I would say that That's true. Yeah. Recently, it's found that even like oven safe, microwave safe plastics may indeed be leaching, in fact, it does seem they are leaching shitloads of plastics into all the food you put in them.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a bit shit because we saw that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But now it is the case. I think, it seems to me, we're fucking saturated in these things. Mm. And instead of trying to reduce these things, we probably need to start looking for solutions to neutralize these things. Right? What is it? 3M, that whole Dark Waters film. Have you seen that film? Great film. About 3M dumping Teflon. And the negative effects of Teflon. Like, they poisoned, all of the planet when they did that. Like, that got into the water stream, and now it's in every living thing on Earth. So really, we probably... Do you not think that?
Well, there's the two angles to it, right? If you're in a bathtub and you're shitting yourself, the priority is to stop shitting yourself. Then you want to worry about sifting out all the shit that's already in the bathtub. But there's nothing to say that you can't try and do both at the same time.
And what if shitting yourself is keeping, and I don't want to say the economy, because I know that putting the economy ahead of human lives makes no sense whatsoever. But in order to maintain an economy that funds research, that funds, keeps the lights on to help machines work to perform science, in a way, that's not a perfect analogy, because that bathtub of shit is not entirely useless, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I guess that's where energy mix comes in. And I'm playing devil's advocate here as well.
But it's a rational point. This was what the guy, Sultan Al-Jaber, who was the head of COP28, the comments that he was making about there's no science behind the phase out of fossil fuels.
Mm.
Like, you could be charitable and say that was what he was getting at. Like, we can't just stop doing it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well,
I think
there is a lot of science behind why we should stop doing it.
Yeah, we should be aiming for stopping.
Yeah.
that's
the thing. So I'm doing, there's a video that should be coming out on my channel next week that's on good news about climate. Because there is loads of good news about climate. Just people don't talk about it. And one of the things that I try and put in context is, renewables are, being installed so much faster than people know. Like, we think that by the end of the decade, it'll be, 40% plus of electricity will come from renewables. Mm, and that's up from like 1% at the start of the century. So it's huge. But you had to put that in perspective of the overall amount of energy that we get from fossil fuels hasn't actually changed that much. Like, because there's more than just electricity. You've got heating, you've got transport and stuff like that. And yeah, you can electrify those sectors. You can have electric cars, you can have heat pumps. And the total percentage of energy that is coming from electricity, sorry, being used in electricity, has gone up in like a couple of percentage points the past decade. But it's not enough. So like, the world still does absolutely run on fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. And it's like...
record profits, right?
Yeah, record profits. But like, you know, we are actually changing it. And like, we're not in a position to be able to pivot and just do it tomorrow. And yeah, you are keeping the global economy going. But like... that trajectory that we're on is currently the right direction. It's just too slow, but you can't lose sight of the fact that it is happening, you know? Mm. But to answer the point about like sieving your own shit out of the bathtub. Yes.
I have had to do that. Podcast, I do that quite a lot. I'm merely doing it in the shower these days because then you can just stomp it.
It's, like, it's quite relatable, yeah.
You absolutely can, and there's nothing stopping you from doing two things at the same time. Mm. It's a question of whether doing that distracts you from actually finding the solution in the first place. So, like, people talking about carbon capture and storage, like, that is absolutely just a distraction. That is just trying to keep you using fossil fuels for longer.
Yeah.
Like, there are ways to mitigate the impact that we're having, like positive afforestation. Jingle Jam partner Just Dig It does this really well, where you're planting trees where they were previously lost using indigenous techniques and indigenous populations. Like, you can do it in a sensible way, but as long as you do it in that context of you stop shitting the bath, basically. Yeah.
Stop shitting in the bath, basically, is what we're trying to get at.
Sorry, guys. I'll stop. Fine,
it's not at least we can tell it. A lot about your diet from the shit.
Yeah. Come on, lower it.
It's just the warm water. There's something about it. Just. But no, that is very interesting. Thank you for that insight.
Isn't there a problem with cow farting as well? Methane. Just to bring it back to farts, so I know you love to talk about farts.
That's a common misconception. It's burps.
It's burps, is it?
Oh, God,
it's a sex doll.
Oh, no.
It's a sex doll. It's fine. It was a new addition to the set. Doll. It's fine.
So, yeah, cows are ruminants, so they have different stomachs, and then the way that they process grass
they got
is...
four, right?
I don't know if that sounds right. I don't know about cows to dispute it.
Yeah.
Let's say four.
They move the grass around inside their stomachs, and doing that, they generate methane that they burp out. And that's one of the reasons why the carbon footprint of beef specifically is so high.
Yeah.
I think it's like 60 kilograms of CO2 for every kilogram. Oh, sorry, CO2 equivalent, so including stuff like methane, for every kilo of beef.
Wow. That's crazy.
Jeez.
Like, it is, if you actually look at like a graph comparing it, and obviously it's global average data, there's slight variations depending where you are, but like the majority of it is simply just how cows feed themselves. It's not transport, it's not how you package it or anything like that. It is just the fact that they burp.
So should we be worried about how much we fart?
Us?
As humans.
Not so. Tell you what.
I do a lot.
This guy.
I fart a lot.
It's huge.
What about people do it a lot more? Like, you know, like passive smoking is one thing, but like full-on smoking is another. I'm a full-on farter.
And then to go also, just to bounce back to the particulate matter, should we be worried in the same room as him farting?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would.
And so when
is
we breathe
going
in,
to their brains?
We haven't probably fully understood.
Your brains are getting lodged with Smith's
shit.
Because
I feel like...
if we're going to have a stroke and die because
honestly,
of your
it might make you smarter.
I might generate a gag reflex to fart if I knew from... a fact that tiny, tiny pieces of his poo are going into my body.
There's a lot of COVID PPE still kicking around. I think you might want to invest in some for this.
God.
Like full-on respirator.
Yeah, but how do you know what's the good stuff and how do you know it's the thing that's funding
Michelle
Monet's defense fund? Yeah. That was good. That was a good segue. That's very funny. Like, I didn't know whether to ask more questions about methane because, funnily enough, I was talking about methane last night. It might be because I knew you were coming on today. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, hold on, I'm going to have to light that one off.
get a match, honey!
The council put one of those, you know those things in landfill sites where they burn off the methane and the little things? I've got one of those on the side of my ensuite. but like the...
it's always on fire.
The thing about the permafrost melting and releasing huge methane deposits could speed up...
that's a tipping point that we know about. That's an interesting one. So basically, there's a lot of they're clathrates. So there's stuff that's buried in the permafrost in Siberia, northern latitudes, that if the ice melts, would release lots of methane, amongst other things. There's also the concern that actually it could release ancient viruses.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. So like bubonic plague might be stored.
Yeah, but we definitely know the methane's in there. We don't necessarily know the mind-eating ancient viruses in
not.
There.
But
we're just sat on a ticking time bomb.
we don't know, actually.
Do I want the methane or the virus? Tell me now.
Fuck, at the same time. Fuck, one's going to kill you a lot faster. Because we don't really have a very good idea of like how close it is to melting and how much methane thing there is there, because it's so inaccessible. Like, no PhD student wants to go to Siberia for 3 years and measure basically the Earth farting. Like, that's fundamentally what it is.
So a couple of years ago, I saw like some sort of scientific panel addressing a lot of very important people, probably a UN thing, talking about this very issue of, and the head scientists involved in studying the amount of methane being released from the Siberian permafrost was crying.
Yeah,
and I don't know whether that's because the gig was that bad.
These conferences are all off the ground.
You know, like she was so like, this could, like, you know, this could turn climate change in the next 100 years into climate change in the next 5 years. And you know, like, sort of like the amount of methane that could be like potentially could be produced is like, you know, nuclear winter kind of style shit.
Yeah, there's large error bars in terms of the magnitude pop and the timescale. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a paper that came out last year by Chris Lenton about global tipping points. So it's an example of a tipping point. There are other ones like the Gulf Stream shutting down, like the Amazon forest dying back, loss of the West Antarctic ice sheet, stuff like that, where we have a best guess of how much warming we think we would need to hit to release all of it. But then there's an error bar, and then the impact regionally and globally also has a pretty large error bar. And that is one of the least well-understood ones. Mm. And yeah, like, it is, if you are looking at the upper end of it, it's pretty fucking devastating. Mm-hmm. Like, in the same way that on the other end of the spectrum, if the AMOC, like the Gulf Stream shuts down, Europe could cool by 10 degrees. Like, it could literally be ice age conditions.
Oh, God.
But over the course of maybe a century.
Upside, we'd be able to get right across the channel into France for croissants.
I was going to go for invasion, for Henry III style invasion.
You want to get the sleds going?
We're going to get Calais back. We're going to make France great again.
Most of it.
Got the Alps. You've got to look at the Alps sides. Yeah. Sure, most of Brittany's underwater, but
it's all frozen. It's not that bad.
But yeah, Well, that's okay. Well, glad to hear there's a big error bar. That error bar helps me sleep at night.
And that's the thing. Like, there's so little about those kind of tipping points that we do know for absolutely sure. Like, it's one of these systems. And I was actually talking to a guy the other day about how, like, the Gulf Stream specifically, we don't know if we could ever know when it would shut down, if that makes sense, because it's such a complicated system. Like, the way that you model it, like, this guy's conclusion was basically like, it's kind of impossible to say. Like, we think
it's
that
it's so chaotic,
it's like so far, like we think that it is triggerable, but we don't know exactly when, and it's not going
to
be
so
the
just
near
to explain to people what the Gulf Stream briefly is.
Sure. So the Gulf Stream is this current of warm water in the Atlantic that goes from the west coast of America the east coast of America up to Western Europe. It's the reason why Western Europe and the UK specifically is so much warmer than they are, because if you look at the same latitude as the UK in America? It's like the middle of Canada.
You're asking me the latitude, and I don't know the difference between latitude and longitude. So
it's like, basically, we're so much warmer than we should be because of this thing. And potentially, if Greenland specifically melts, then that would have lots of fresh water that would disrupt that current, and you wouldn't get that conveyor belt of warmth, and suddenly Europe would really quite quickly cool off.
It's our little safety blanket.
Yeah, basically. And there's another one that people don't seem to talk about, called I think it's the Kurashishi current in the Pacific that goes off the west coast of the Pacific. Because there's this, because of the Earth rotating, water in the ocean sloshes to the west of the ocean basin.
Whoa, hold on.
And then it just goes, because the Earth's
rotating.
hang on. Because the sun is going overhead, right? The gravity of the sun
a spinning direction
is pulling the oceans, and it sloshes to the west of the ocean basins, and it forms
and over the edge.
Sometimes.
Holy shit. Wow.
Learning a lot. The politics behind it are frustrating.
I see that you've
like
just
the climate crisis. Well, only because I saw yesterday that apparently Labour's pulling back on their spend for environmental projects.
Hell.
But there's constantly promises to do stuff. There's all these meetings where they're like, we're going to do this now as a group. Yeah, we're going to rally together. Everyone's going
to
sign a contract. And then
at that point, you did the fucking hell thing. How often do you wake up in the morning with that feeling?
Well, I look down at my body and I'm just like, shit.
I'm changed the world. At the knowledge you have in your brain.
Yeah,
it
seems like no one takes it seriously at all. Well, at least they're not zooming out to the point where they're like actually taking the real risk.
Well, I think there's two aspects.
Because it's not affecting me now. It probably won't affect me right now. So
I think people are taking it seriously, but in a way that we are not. programmed as humans to deal with societal changes that are global and take place over decades.
Yeah.
And like, so I make this point in the video that before the Paris Agreement in 2016, we thought that we would get 4 degrees of warming this century. And at the moment, current policy, we think, is going to limit it to 2.7.
Okay.
So we've already, in less than 10 years, really flattened that curve. And it's not enough, but we have made progress. The longer term, I think it's the 2030 targets, if we go through with those and they become policy, would limit it to 2.3. And if we hit all the net zero targets the countries have, it's looking like 2.1 at the moment. So, like, policy that is currently in place is making a difference. And people are taking it seriously. They're just not taking it seriously enough, and we're not doing it fast enough. Which is, as when you see the news about Labour have just rode back this promise, like, really frustrating. Mm. Because, like, if you look at the data, people around the world, like, have never been more engaged about climate. Most voters in the top 20 most polluting countries support climate policy. Like, they want us to do something about it. And political parties know that if they don't do something about it, for at least the majority of people, but because democracy's fucked, that doesn't necessarily mean the winning an election, like, it's going to cost you votes. So the thing with Labour's frustrating, because what the Tories are attacking isn't so much their climate policy, it's the fact that it's just a clusterfuck in Labour. Like, there's no coherency, there's no
they've stated it's because of economical reasons.
They're teasing them apart on this because Starmer's saying one thing and the other people in the party are saying another thing, and it's just not cohesive. I think if they were cohesive, they wouldn't have had to have wrote this back. It just took them actually kind of sticking to their guns, which makes it so much more frustrating.
So you don't know what they're actually going to do.
Because this is the thing, they can make these promises, but they can always just pull that back whenever.
Yeah, Nick
Clegg. Like, oh, the economy's not quite right. Oh, there's another pandemic. Okay, sure. We won't bother with any of that stuff. But surely this should be the priority number one for everyone, realistically, because obviously it affects everyone.
Yeah.
No matter who you follow, no matter which side you lean on, everyone's going to be equally fucked the same way.
Well, if you, like, I imagine it like, you know those star diagrams, if you're rating like a player in FIFA or something, it's like defense, attack, speed.
You've got stats.
I imagine like a voter has that, but for like, you've got defense, you've got energy, you've got climate, stuff like that. And like, I can't tell you that you should have climate at the top of your list.
Of course,
you may have something that means that you may have a pre-existing condition, say, and you want healthcare, you want to fund the NHS, and that's a personal thing. Can't tell you to not do that, but I can tell everyone that we should be taking climate at towards the top of the list for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, just...
Also, everything's relative as well. So, like...
But there's an economic argument to be taken action on.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Because, like, the cheapest form of energy we've ever invented is now solar energy. Like, solar is spectacularly cheap. And obviously it doesn't work particularly well in this country, but wind is spectacularly cheap as well. And, like, from the argument of, like, energy security, not being dependent on, like, gas imports from Russia or from America now, like, there are so many reasons economically why you do want to go the low-carbon route, why you do want to take over control of your energy. And it's really frustrating to see a lot of the reasons why people don't take action on that is because of misinformation. Mm. Right, it's because of fear-mongering.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, well, welcome to my world.
Yeah, right, your comment section must be a burning dumpster fire.
What's wild is there's an amazing channel. People don't watch it. There's a channel called Climate Town. Makes basically, you know that scene in Suicide Squad where it's like, he's me, but better.
Right,
that's
kind
of me in Climate Town. Yeah, like, sure. It's just better than me.
Don't sell yourself short.
And he, I was talking to him about his comments, and I was like, you know, geez, what do you have to wade through? And he was like, oh, mine are great.
Oh, wow.
My comments are lovely. And I was just like, what the fuck are you?
Who
are
you being sent to?
Where are your audience coming from?
Your algorithm's going to, you know, like, climate deniers.
Obviously, like, the core audience of people that I get are lovely, but it's the tail end. It's the people who watch a video, like, you know, years and years after it's gone out, and it's just like, ah, Jesus. But there's ways, I will shout out YouTube's moderation tools, because there's great ways that you can catch a lot of them. So, like, you have the list of words where if you include it in the comment, it gets filtered. Yeah. So I've got, like, liberal, misspelled. So like, L-I-B-R-A-L. That catches loads.
Nice.
Like, Al Gore, all one word.
Wow.
Like, seafront properties is another one.
Really?
There's, like, specific ones that you can get, because it's like Obama's buying seafront properties.
Right. Yeah,
it's like,
oh, okay, cool. Stop messing. Okay. Well, I think it's good that you have those, because
you should,
I feel like the other guy's in an echo chamber of people that already agree, whereas you're at least...
I'm reaching the people.
You're reaching the people. Yeah. And if you can convert at least one of those people to start considering the other option of, like, oh, maybe I have been brainwashed by doomsaying politics news, then I think that's a good thing.
Well, the way also, like, if you don't manage to convert those people, you could have a secret side project, clandestine paramilitary force that goes and finds those people.
Wow. You should read the Ministry for the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson.
Is that what that is?
It's a UN agency. Okay, slight spoilers for this book. If people don't want to read it, mute the podcast for like 30 seconds. It's this idea that there's a UN agency that's set up to advocate for people in the future. Right. And this woman who heads it has this experience where she's like, I think we want a paramilitary force.
Right.
And she goes to her chief of staff and she's like, I think on the down low we need a paramilitary force. And he's just like, we already have one. It's like, whoa.
Oh, shit.
Shit the bed. Mm. Okay, you can unmute now.
That's cool.
But yeah, I recommend that book. It's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I try and do with the videos is I call them Trojan horse videos, because like you package it to look like it's coming from a climate skeptic.
Right,
so it's okay. Like, where's the sea level rise? Why hasn't the sea level risen yet? Mm. And then you can like kind of hit them about a third of the way into the video to be like, yeah, here's the data kind of thing. But you package it in such a way that it gets into their algorithm, because otherwise, yeah, you're preaching to the choir and YouTube just radicalizes people massively. So they're never going to see most scientific content. They're going to see stuff from Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson and whatnot.
This is why, and I've said this for a long time, I've advocated for like positive propaganda. Like, imagine if the government was sponsoring, you know, well, I guess it, being an elected government, it kind of reflects the opinions of whoever elected them. So it's a bit tricky, but like, you know, like you doing that, that what you're saying with the titles and like trying to like draw people in by appearing as a skeptic and then giving them something like that's almost like a sort of prestige style form of propaganda where you can sort of like bait and switch people, but in a way that's like
explains the comments.
Clever. Yeah. Just, what the fuck? I thought this guy was going to agree with me.
You're trying to educate
me. You wasted 3 minutes of my life.
Downvote. I hope they only show me agreeable content on YouTube for the future.
When was the last time you disliked a YouTube video?
I don't interact.
I don't interact with platforms because I don't want them to understand why I watch their platform.
That's fair enough.
But you see, just merely a click now. When they've got your eyes, you're fucked.
For sure, yeah, the eyes.
Once you've got the Vision Pro, you're like, I'm looking at everything I want to look at.
But phones already pay attention to where you're glancing
on the screen.
And even if you're scrolling. So yeah, you can't avoid it, you're right.
Also, you physically can't on YouTube now. There is
no, you can still dislike it, but they don't show you the number.
That's right.
Because I really dislike something, I would type dislike comment.
I don't understand the kind of person who dislikes videos. I really, and I get them on every single, even like, you know, like when my baby was born, it was just like, you know, dislikes on this.
I guess
video.
It depends if it's offensive specifically, but I'm not really, I just don't bother. Like, I just move on. But
it's a certain kind of person.
With these things differently.
It's a troll.
But it also means that if I'm successful at doing this kind of propaganda, like positive propaganda, like my life is hell reading the comments.
Any comment is a good comment in that regard, algorithmically.
It's like Borat. It increased, tourism to Kazakhstan. Any tourism is good. Publicity is good publicity.
For your mental health, it is death by a thousand cuts.
Absolutely. I need to. This is why I mostly consume content about Warhammer. I don't watch that many other climate people.
What do you think? Escapes are very important, aren't they?
What do you think fuels like climate denial? Is it just?
So this is interesting.
Propaganda?
Actually.
Is it?
So there was a really big paper that came out a couple of weeks ago that basically said climate skepticism online has changed. It used to be climate's not changing, and if it is changing, we're not responsible for it. Mm. And now it's like those arguments have really fallen off, and now
there's an acceptance.
What we're proposing isn't going to work. There's no point doing anything. Okay. Like doomerism has now replaced skepticism, seemingly.
Right.
And that's like, I think, a lot more worrying, because I think that's a much more effective way to engage people to not do something. Because if you say to people, we're not warming, well, the evidence is just mounting and mounting. Mm. But like to say to someone, well, this solution isn't going to work. And it's people who you might not think of as being skeptics, like say Jordan Peterson or like Ben Shapiro. It's just like, you know, you are effectively indoctrinating people to think, well, this problem is unsolvable. Let's not do anything about it. And that means it probably isn't that big of a deal. And I think that's so much more dangerous. Mm. So I'll probably do a video about that quite soon.
But that strikes me as more just a selfish mentality of, it's not going to affect me in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Let's live our lives and have fucking fun. And it's like, I can appreciate why a lot of people might think like that. And like, well, it's not affecting me. I don't have kids or whatever.
Or you're so disempowered that you feel like, well, I want to care.
I can't make
But it actually hurts to care, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It hurts to become invested in something you cannot influence. I think people resist that quite often.
But the original point about where does skepticism come from is a book I literally think everyone should read called Merchants of Doubt. Now, it's basically the same scientists were trotted out to dispute the science about smoking causing cancer, the hole in the ozone layer, acid rain, and climate change. The same scientists were brought out, and they were all brought out by these right-wing think tanks. Because in America, there were this small but really influential group of people who thought that basically legislation that changed how we lived our lives was communism. And so they fought massively to stop people from actually doing that kind of legislation. So there was, I did a video about this last year, there was a big conference in the Netherlands called the Noordwijk Conference in 1989, where we came really close to a legally binding agreement to limit greenhouse gas emissions. And the Americans, and that group of people specifically, torpedoed it because they got to the White House advisor on science.
Oh, that's pretty sad.
So everyone should read that book. It's Merchants of Doubt by Oreskes and Conway. It's an amazing read, but it does make you angry.
It. Yeah, I was going to say, does it not spoilers, make you feel disenfranchised? I guess I just try to dodge disenfranchisement as much as possible because I don't think I'm a particularly durable person when it comes to like dealing with all of these things that you must deal with in a much more acute way than I ever do as well. Like, which is, yeah, tough, I think, you know, hanging
Testament.
On.
I think it's just a worry that there's not enough intellectual people in Parliament.
Or the world?
In the world, sure, but like, they're there. It's just the fact that they
can't make enough of
an impact. They're not going to be voted for their, you know, opinions and stuff.
And then
when you speak, they say
is,
things that confuse people. So they're like, I don't want to listen to that guy.
But I'll
listen
to the guy with the floppy hair. I feel like we are in a period of transition where we're going from, we could have politicians that exist in the way they do right now because their inaction or their failure to properly target resources doesn't have enough of an impact. I think we're really coming to like the rub now where we need effective government, effective legislation in order to act fast enough to prevent not societal collapse, but just damage to all of us, right? In every way, in progress. You know, that if we don't get a grip on these things, we may not see amazing things in our lifetimes that we would have done if science was allowed to progress, or if we were allowed to not spend all our resources.
Oh yeah, I can look at coral reefs on
not pornography. Yeah, it's about human experience. And it's about looking after the planet as well, and looking about after all the things that live on it. And I think like everyone's just kind of getting a bit sick.
I think one of the big problems is that people seem to think that humans are separate from nature and like we're not actually massively intrinsically linked to it. And I think,
well, we were genetically modified by aliens, but the planet is very much our circulatory system, isn't it?
Yeah, like, we are enmeshed in it. It's not a separate us and them. And I think there's an organization called Durrell that I've worked with before who basically advocate for getting people more in touch with nature and just exposing them to this is what different species look like. You know, but some basic stuff about their ecology and biology, and just doing that makes you aware of how connected stuff is. And I think we could do so much good by just getting people outside and connected. Touching some goddamn grass, exactly. but I think there's a large argument to be made for curtailing civil liberties, honestly. Like,
say this, because I say this, and I can't have you say it.
Because
I'm always... I said this to I've got a friend who's a very smart guy. He works in Africa, helping indigenous people to... last time I spoke to him, he was stopping people from eating bushmeat, basically. Nice. Because basically the problem was, as people were getting ill, they were getting huge illnesses going through because of all the parasites.
The worms. You showed us the bucket of worms.
That's a different guy. That's a different guy who does parasite study. But anyway, he was, he is having to deal with a lot of, I can't remember the point I was making now. Fuck. Now all I can think of was that
he's
bucket of worms.
Helping the it's quite vivid in
my mind. Civil liberties, that was it, sorry. And he went to a big thing where they were talking about sustainability. I think it was largely about forestry. And when I say big thing, I mean like many, many representatives from many countries. And he's saying like, you know, China are essentially just like ignoring. Like the problem is right now is China don't seem to care enough about what everybody else thinks about doing things. And so they're having a big problem with breaking through to them to getting it. But largely what I was saying, I was talking a bit about like authoritarianism, because we were talking about China. And, you know, like China has an authoritarian approach to a lot of the modern things that we're all facing, right? Be it COVID with the fucking drones spraying streets and things like that, you know, like completely different approach to what we're doing.
Well, they just banned all the gacha mechanics on microtransactions.
They've just done that. So when you say civil liberties, were you talking about like authoritarian solutions to global problems?
It would be something like stopping you from using a particular product if it was massively damaging to the environment.
Yeah.
Like, but to be fair, and like like, I want to be very clear. I don't agree with the Chinese government on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Obviously, their treatment of ethnic minorities and their foreign policy. There's lots of stuff to disagree with.
And the Uyghurs. Everyone's been quiet about the Uyghurs.
But they, yeah, exactly. But on their climate policy, they are possibly getting more shit done than anyone else.
Yeah, they've done a lot of solar transition.
So
is it,
the most mind-blowing statistic. Last year, China added more solar panels than the US has in its entire history.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it that, yeah. is crazy how quick China is rolling out renewables.
Interesting.
Their emissions have probably peaked last year. Their installation of solar is going to be the largest form of energy for them next year, I think.
Oh,
like,
shit.
That's this thing that people seem to have. Like, they like the idea of China as being this boogeyman because I guess it rescinds control. It's like, it means I don't have to do anything because China's not doing anything.
It's othering, yeah.
But they, you know, they are massively ramping out their use of renewables, and they are probably going to hit their targets in terms of, because they do set out these 5-year plans for, like, we're going to do this and this, and some of them are environmental, and yeah, I reckon they will probably hit them.
Does China control quite a lot of the resources required to build solar panels?
Yes, that's the thing about it, is they control the global supply.
And are they using it to create an even greater dominance over the world in another form? So why fight a war when you can just build the most solar panels?
Yeah, so you know, that's the flip side of it, is yes, they're doing a fantastic thing from a carbon emissions perspective, but in terms of, like, I don't know the exact statistics, but I think it's like the lithium extraction and processing, I think they control like 95% of that.
And so isn't that, because I thought that there was also like this kind of, the fact that they're mining for all this stuff is also damaging as well. Is that a climate thing or is that something else? Whereas for batteries and like the electric cars,
it's probably all holistic.
The production of all of these
things. I guess climate
things.
Is always linked to all forms.
It'll be linked to it, but I think it's like, stuff like runoff from the mining operations.
Like, yeah,
it's also humanitarian. It's just like people are treated like shit. And it's a new form of colonialism where it's a lot of this is happening in Africa and it's being controlled by Chinese entities going in and doing this. But like, you know, you can't ignore that. The whole thing about the climate crisis is it is a holistic thing. Everything is connected, and you can't solve just one problem without addressing these other ones.
So they say that, like, a brand new electric car is probably not actually as efficient as, you know, the emissions, because obviously everything that went into this new product still required a lot of fucking emissions beforehand.
I can't remember the exact figure.
It doesn't weigh off until like several years later. So.
But centralized emissions are always going to be better than decentralized emissions, I think, is my blanket response to something about like the idea of an electric car versus a combustion car. At least with electric cars, emissions are centralized. It's much easier to regulate, control, and add measures to control those emissions than, say, making even good petrol cars, because those emissions are just out the tailpipe and into everybody's air, right? Yeah. I think that would be my thought.
I can't remember again. Exactly. I think it's like a couple of thousand miles that you need to drive in an EV before then you break even and it's less effective. So it's not actually that far.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Like it's, but there's a lot of pushback. It's like a culture war issue on EVs specifically. Like in the UK press in particular. Like Daily Mail hates EVs.
Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, they just want to take any of their opinions
into... I thought it was just infrastructure was just going to be... Well, the infrastructure wouldn't manage it if we got rid of...
But it's a chicken and egg thing. It's like you don't build the infrastructure until you have the demand.
You have to grow it. Mm.
And that's an example where you need government policy. You need the government to step in and say, right, we're going to build these charging stations. Yeah. Or support industry to do that, and then that supports the uptake.
I like the idea of swappable batteries. Well,
there was that Tom Scott video about
it. Yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah. There are companies that are trying to do it, but it looks like
hydrogen cells.
Hydrogen cells. Well, it all depends on investment. Like, it might happen.
Hydrogen's a weird one as well, because it also uses the existing fossil fuel infrastructure,
which they'd be very happy with.
And that's why they tend to push hydrogen.
Right,
another distraction, perhaps.
Yeah, probably. It's something that I don't think we need.
Distraction from what, sorry?
As in from, like, people going to electrifying things.
Right.
So that it's still keeping them in business, and it's like... Well,
so you would still rate an EV over a hydrogen vehicle?
I am not an expert in this, but my understanding of it is yes.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, at the end of the day...
EVs aren't in their final form right now as well, you know? Like, I'm talking like an EV with a 500-mile range would be preferable to a hydrogen vehicle with a 500-mile range, let's say.
Yeah, as I understand it, and I need to do more research into this, and that's partly because... By buying the hydrogen, you are inherently supporting that fossil fuel extraction system and that existing mode of getting energy where we don't need it anymore.
We're not going to be extracting hydrogen, we'd be generating it, surely.
No, but that's propping up the business of someone like Shell or BP.
You're basically just letting them live on. They don't get their comeuppance, so they're
subsidising their continued existence.
Right, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Which is also what kind of governments have been doing for however many years. I don't know, whatever it is, it's... a fucking crazy statistic in terms of fossil fuel subsidies per day. It's you know, it's like £150 million a day. It's probably even more than that. I can't remember.
Do you want to hear two crazy things now? Are we okay? Sure, yeah, you guys have any more questions?
Yeah. All right, yeah, okay.
First, talking about how colonialization, just earlier on, how you said about how China's doing some form of colonialization by using Africa to mine certain minerals. Mm. Russia is using African gold mines to buy Iranian drones. So they sent Iran last year, at the end of last year, 2 tons of gold in order to purchase their drones.
It's like a medieval convoy.
Yeah, right. It's crazy, isn't it?
Trained in blanket of wagons.
The things that happen and they're using Wagner mercenaries to do it. So obviously they killed Wagner leader because, you know, couldn't stand that slight. It is medieval. No. It is the medieval times, of course.
And there was a plane.
He tried to challenge the king and took a pop. The champ missed.
That day when he was like marching on Moscow, I was on a scout.
I'm really interested to see what happens.
I was the only one who had like phone signal, and I was like, guys,
that's pretty crazy.
There's a tank column marching on Moscow right now.
Oh, I know. And also, the worst thing was, it's like how like sedate and almost it seemed like as they were going through, you're like, he's fucked this up. Nobody's come to his call. They're not going to depose him. And he knows that he's just a dead man walking like around Moscow. So this is the other crazy story that I wanted to tell you guys at the end of this. I found.
Is it politicky?
It's not politicky.
Oh, is this the murder mystery?
This is the murder mystery.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, yeah,
if that's okay, and we'll go on to that. Right. So, a little bit of a story. This is this was published on Now Then magazine. I have no idea whether that's it. Might be an
Is it just
magazine.
Now Then or Now Then Now Then? Because
Now Then magazine.
The now then, now
well,
then.
It's Sheffield. I don't know. Murder: the likely story of Gareth Williams. So Gareth Williams has been in the news again recently. He was this person. I'll just read the story. A Welsh lad achieves A grade maths and computer science A levels aged 13. He gets a first class degree in maths age 17, and at 18 begins his PhD in Manchester. When he is 22, he starts working for GCHQ, the government's listening station at Cheltenham. He's quiet, a country boy. He doesn't go out a lot. He likes his own space. Then, one day in 2010, Gareth doesn't turn up to work, nor the next day. A week goes by. Eventually, a policeman is sent round to the Pimlico flat where Gareth has been living for a year. The officer lets himself in with a spare key to find the curtains are drawn. The flat is extremely neat and tidy. Everything is in order, except a padlocked North Face hall door in the bath of the ensuite bedroom, containing the naked body of Gareth Williams. His DNA is not found on the padlock, zipper or Velcro handles, which have been fastened. In fact, there is hardly any DNA in the flat except for traces belonging to an unidentified person on the zip of the padlock. Neither are there any finger, foot or palm prints on the bath. There is no evidence of a struggle, apart from a little bruising on Gareth's elbow as he lies curled in the fetal position. The shower curtain has been drawn, the lights are off, a doorknob has been removed, and one of his 4 phones has been reset to factory settings. The flat has been locked from the outside. The key for the padlock is in the bag with Gareth. This isn't a board game, so you're not going to need to write all this down.
Oh,
but I'm just giving you more and more of the level of oddness. No. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So well no.
we're going to try and figure out what happened.
So two courts. I'll give you my take on what's actually happened. There's two.
This is what he'd do.
Two courts have ruled misadventure. There's a little bit more to this. The toxicology reports came back inconclusive since the body had been left decomposing for a week with the central heating set on full despite it being midsummer. It's too late to prove whether Gareth died whilst he was in the bag or before. No cause of death is found. Despite this, Dr. Fiona Wilcox says in the coroner's final report that Gareth's death was unnatural, unlikely, and likely to have been criminally meditated, and that the lack of hand and footprints in the bathroom is significant. In addition, Dr. Wilcox voices concerns about why it took so long for Williams's disappearance to be reported. She says that the evidence given by Gareth's line manager at GCHQ begins to stretch the bounds of credibility, and that the delay could have been caused key evidence at the scene to be lost. Robin Williams, not the singer, the Williams family solicitor, said that Gareth's employers failed to make even the most basic inquiries about his whereabouts or welfare. This, again, remember, this is like an absolute prodigy math genius that's working at GCHQ, which is essentially like the
NSA kind of.
Yeah, NSA. Like they monitor communications,
Robin Williams
hack. Yeah, this is
just
their
solicitor. Hunting
or? Different Robin Williams.
Because there's a math genius in that one as well.
Yeah, there is, yeah. So basically what happened is it emerges in the course of the investigation that Gareth has visited bondage websites and looked up bondage training on YouTube. His internet history suggests he's had an interest in fashion and there were £20,000 worth of women's clothing in the flat. During the inquest and subsequent police investigations, it's postulated that Gareth died in some sort of sexual act. fact. Much delving is done into his private life. A video is found by police on his phone of him wagging his rear end at the camera. His landlady admits that she once found Gareth tied to his bed and called for help when he needed help being untied. So he is into bondage and stuff, right? But it doesn't seem like, in my opinion, it doesn't seem like him being found in a completely wiped crime scene inside a locked duffel bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Feels like bondage. It feels like it's been staged. Yeah, yeah. And so, so a lot of people have postulated that this may have been a foreign asset. So a foreign agency, I'm going to say Russia, has has come in, tried to get this guy to do, like, tried to turn him, tried to make him sort of like a sedition. I think I can't remember what they call it. It's basically where you try to convince a person to start working for you.
Oh, yeah.
And when it goes wrong, they kill you. And so when you don't say yes, basically they kill you and make it look like nothing ever happened. But what's really crazy about this is two different courts, including the ones working with the GCHQ themselves, have found, like, they've not really said, like, this looks suspicious. They've all just been like, oh, no, who knows what could have happened? Oh, no, who knows what could have happened? You know, and it got brought up again recently, like last week. Again, it's just like, it's this really bizarre case of this very special person in really odd circumstances that has been handled really strangely. What do you guys think may have happened here? Is there something that interests you? Does that seem kind of crazy to you?
I don't think he would have put himself in the bag.
Or it's not him.
Oh, wow.
What if he has a twin?
Oh, you think they prestiged it?
It's more just like, I think the most impressive part would be the cleaning up of the entire area to not actually have any trace.
That's the sign of someone who was a maths genius. That's how they think about it. What if they had a twin and the DNA is sufficiently close that he knew that on analysis they think it was him?
Why do they want to kill his twin?
Because then he can make an escape.
From where?
And what from doing what he does. He can just have a new identity, not work for GCHQ anymore.
So he had his backup twin just in case he killed his twin.
Just to cover his own ass.
Yeah.
And he had an awesome opportunity from Russia.
Yeah,
to go work with them, but it's like you have to.
But we have added a twin to this mix. I'm sure that they'll be.
He might not have known that he was a twin. Could have been
classic
in the attic the entire time.
Well, we don't know anything about his parents. So were they his biological parents? Because they would have surely someone would have grilled these people and been like, "What the fuck happened to your kid?" Like,
yeah, apparently.
He hated his twin. One thing I forgot to mention. He's got a twin, identical.
Hugo up in the loft.
Yeah,
you don't think his completely identical twin would have something to do with this, would you?
But like, to clean a scene like that does seem very much like some sort of agency would have done it.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. But then, he could have been into
what
some...
What do you think?
I reckon this is a sex act
that
was all premeditated. And the whole thing was like, the kink is cleanliness, but also a bit of bondage.
Yeah.
So I reckon it's like, lock me in here for a bit, put me in the bag, and like just make this seem like nothing's going on and come back to me later.
And then that person died.
They all died. Yeah.
They all died.
What if he fell foul of a cleaning company?
Didn't pay.
Pay your cleaning bills. What the fuck?
We'll make it look like an accident, and they'll never find the prints.
Yes, just me.
Jesus.
We can baffle the best scientific minds in the country.
Is that good? Like, we should
silent witness lab. We're like, this is
great.
Great.
They can clean that well. I mean, because I just can't imagine it's easy to clean up. DNA, hair follicles, like fingerprints, sweat, anything. Like they found nothing.
If you wear a good morph suit, I think you could be trace free.
You know? keep everything in the bag that you're in.
A solid morph suit, some nitrile gloves.
But then that makes it look, like some sort of fucking super spy did it or some shit.
Well, that's insane for a moment that it was, in fact, a foreign hit. You know, much like the Salisbury things that actually happened, you know, an extremely dangerous chemical agent was used to kill people on British soil.
Comically, like, you know,
badly. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. They were distracted by the beautiful spires.
123 meters tall. Yeah.
Whereas this was place to be.
Don't that increase tourism?
There's
nothing in Cheltenham to distract them. So.
Salisbury literally still could have traces of Novichok. Its half-life is something like 600 years to degrade under normal conditions. So if it gets on something, it just stays on it. And like that's why those two homeless people died, because they were rooting through a bin and it just had a bit on a bottle. And
have they tried Daz?
They 99.9%, including the coronavirus.
They should have just spritzed it with a load of bleach and then just walked away.
Yeah, no, it does get. I think you can destroy it with cleaning products. It's just that if you
don't, I have no idea.
Like the sun doesn't degrade it, the sun doesn't break it down. All that sort of stuff. Like it's.
Have you seen the theory? This is what's happened with Liz Truss, by the way.
Well,
she's been replaced. She's a robot.
No, because she met the Queen, and then mysteriously the Queen died quite soon after.
Right. Yeah.
And now just after meeting King Charles, very briefly, presumably during that time.
Well, the Truss is an insider.
Liz Truss. polonium 210 handshake.
I mean, I think her company's enough to kill anyone. Yeah. Like, she is just a fucking broken person, isn't she?
She's trying to break the country as well. I suppose, yeah, she's on a full destructive mission.
She's one of these people that scares me, like, as in, because she seems so, like, detached from reality. It's like you can see there's a pilot behind her eyes just going, okay, let's say this now.
Say pork
and you're
like the alien
and
in
smile.
Men in Black.
Except somehow less charismatic than a man's face opening and showing you a tiny, ugly little ball bag alien. I'd still rather, you know, see that. But no, yeah, and then the popular conservative thing that happened yesterday, and you sent me that thing of Holly Valance talking about how much she loves the right wing.
She's a climate denier.
Holly Valance, your favourite singer.
All this climate crisis and nonsense. Actor. How does that make you feel when someone says climate? Yeah, just denies.
I don't think the climate's real.
Like, it's just like, you know. Or they say something stupid like, when it's really cold, and what about the global warming, eh? And it's like, what the fuck?
We've reached Republican 2000s.
Yeah, that sentence in itself is clearly a misunderstanding of everything.
Okay. And you somehow don't think this is your problem. Yeah. You somehow think that you don't think that you've missed a memo here
it's
somehow.
It's so bizarre. Yeah. And it's just like,
yeah, you got to.
You don't have to be that smart to understand these things.
You really don't.
That's the thing. It's not
look
like
me.
It isn't that.
I'm not smart.
But
I just
like,
didn't
you don't
give
don't
up.
Need a PhD to understand these things. You don't.
Careful, you're going to sound like a Tory in no time. I'm not doing. I just worked hard.
And I had a Baron for a dad.
No, but I guess, obviously, we always try and wrap our heads around why people don't see something the way you see it, right?
I understand I understand the policies behind, as in they're looking at a different thing here. They're looking at the cost of fossil fuels is what they're really kind of, they're being controlled by them in the back end. They know there's big money there, so they don't want to shake that tree.
Maybe being Tory is just a kink.
Maybe.
You know, much like this case. Maybe it's just like a humiliation kink. It's just like you just want to be so desperately wrong about things.
Well, I don't know. Or just not. Someone's you don't have to deal. You don't have to deal with things like, if you don't deny. If you don't accept it's there, you don't have to deal with it, right?
Yeah.
Prime Minister's question times are just having like, you know, trying desperately to hide. That's why they have the paperwork.
Yeah. Fucking hell, yes.
Oh, kid, tell me I'm an idiot again.
Love it. Sorry, I've just come back from seeing our latest approval numbers. Ooh, they're awful. They really hate me.
Is that Caroline Lucas? She's going to tell me I'm right.
Rishi, I got something perfect that you can say in the latest House of Commons speech.
They always give in front of the lectern, right? Yeah. Those are not transparent lecterns.
That's true. That's true.
But they are backless, which is there's a capacity to,
dock.
That's a hollow lectern. Yeah, it's more of a dock. Yeah.
To ask you a personal question, on a scale of the questions you get asked is completely irrelevant to your expertise, how often does that happen? Mm. Like, oh yeah, you're a doctor, right? So tell me about the ground and biology.
Well, it's interesting because my specialism is really narrow. That's the whole thing about a PhD is you become one of the world experts on a tiny thing. Yeah. And my specialism is stratosphere-troposphere coupling over the like Arctic. Right. That's specifically what my PhD was about. And so like there's layers around that, so like atmospheric dynamics and then like the atmosphere as a whole and climate as part of that, but then like
was the climate a big focus or not?
No, at all. No, like it wasn't part of the PhD because there is a research question about whether it's affecting what I was studying, but I was looking at the internal dynamics of how it worked. But like I very, very rarely get asked about exactly what I did, so I basically always feel like I'm talking outside of my specialism. But there is this definition of scientific expertise that is basically where your knowledge matches with somebody else's experience. And so if I know something about why it's cold or why it's, you know, rainy today, then to someone who wants to know the answer to that question, I become an expert.
Right.
So it's sort of subjective, really. But yeah, very rarely do I feel like I'm being asked exactly
about to ask about the coupling.
Well, there was an interesting thing that happened a couple of weeks ago, actually, but we won't talk about that.
Do you feel more like a therapist than a scientist sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I bet. I feel like that's a lot.
Because I asked my audience, like on Instagram, because I did this video recently where I was like, I need to pivot how I'm making content and like change the way that I think previously I was making videos was very academic. It's, I know a thing about this subject I think is important. I want to tell you about it. And I'm going to try and convince you to watch that video by the title and the thumbnail. And I think the way that I need to do things now is, what do you want to know about? And then how does that overlap with what I know? And then how do I get you to watch my version of answering that
question?
And the most common response when I asked on Instagram, what questions do you guys have about climate? Was basically like, is there any hope? Like, should I bother having children? Like, you know,
doomsday.
Is there any good news? And so I was like, cool, right, I will make a video about that. So that's why that next video is going to
We've had a lot of these questions.
Should
ourselves.
I bother having children? It's a good title.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess.
It's interesting. It's like, should I?
Well, as a dad.
I mean, that's a good. I mean, you put your money where your mouth is. I think one last question I would have is, I think so, a lot of the time when I talk to people about, like, my personal feelings regarding, like, I think, you know, climate is the biggest challenge facing humanity right now. I mean, obviously, I don't want all these wars to break out in bigger and bigger scenarios. Lots of crazy shit going on right now. I completely get that. But overall, the overarching thing, because of how holistic and how, you know, how connected we are to all the natural cycles of the world, like, for me, I feel very, like, impassioned to talk about climate as being, like, the big thing we need to solve. And when I talk to people that don't necessarily think like that, the main thing they often say to me is, like, they feel like concern of the climate is dogmatic. So they feel like it's more, a belief than, well, it is a belief in a way, but, like, they're often like, oh, yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from, but, like, I just don't like how everyone's sort of, like, preaching. It's like, it feels, they say, like, oh, it feels like a religion almost, like, it feels like a cult, like, almost like a doomsday cult. Like, do you have a good sort of return to that, or, like, a good reply,
Yeah, I agree, I see where people come from, because it's become a culture war issue. It's become this thing that people shriek about, basically, and I have a real problem with climate coverage that is very doomsayery, and, like, there is a scary thing that's happening at the moment in the North Atlantic. We don't know why it's as warm as it is. It's been basically above historic levels for a year.
Do you think that's related to crab, like, lock drop from crab?
It's probably
catches.
Something to do with crabs.
Because they've said, like, the
bring it back to that
fucking weird,
for a reason.
But I saw recently, just as a tangent, that, like, crab catches and things like that have been way down in the North Atlantic.
Yeah, they've been having these mass die-off events that have been happening. And one of the reasons why we think that is because there's been this decrease in sulfate emissions from ships. So sulfates, when they get in the air, form sulfuric acid, and they reflect some sunlight away. And when you take that away, it results in a warming. So we think that that's a factor, but we don't quite know.
Why have they reduced?
New emissions standards have come in.
So the ocean got used to us polluting, and now
But the amount of energy coming in from the sun used to be slightly lower because we were reflecting some of it away. Right. We took some of the pollution away. It then became, like, the more sunlight made it to the ocean, basically.
So we need more fossil
fuels. That's
one argument. That there's this idea of using geoengineering and reflecting sunlight. Let's not touch that.
Variables.
There are like reasons why we're not sure it's happening, but we, you know, it's not. No scientist is going around. Well, I've not yet to see a scientist going around and saying that's the start of the end of the world. And you see Instagram accounts, and I see it on threads and stuff, where it's just like people won't stop pushing this point of, like, why is no one talking about this? This is the beginning of the end. And it's like, not helpful.
People are losing their mind about this mystery warming
it's
in the Atlantic.
It's all to get them to watch that specific video.
I suppose that's it. It's the fact that, like, we live in a society, and we have this social media
attention grabbing that
it forces you to take these extremist takes, and it radicalizes people to being, like,
you have to rise above the noise, right?
So, like, that's why we're in this, like, mess of people having that response. And I think the only way around it is by having conversations about it and educating yourself about it. If you think that climate has become a dogmatic thing, I'd encourage you to watch or read content from people who are informed about it. That I do some of it, Climate Town does some of it, Just Have a Think. There are lots of people on YouTube who do it.
You actually go to your sources.
Yeah. And you can, to be fair, the IPCC, like, the technical, sorry, not the technical reports, but the summary for policymakers, the language is perfectly readable. Like, the average person can go in there and get what they're saying. And, like, it's just trying to get at that information without that filter of what is going to grab your attention on social media. So, you know, it's a really hard situation we found ourselves in. And that, I can totally see why. But in terms of, like, when I have those conversations with people, it's like, well, what do you want to know? You know, talk to me about it and I'll answer your questions as best I can.
That must be a difficult position for you to be in as well, because you have to have an existence on YouTube.
Yeah.
You have to rise above the noise, so to speak.
I don't want to make clickbait.
How do you not fall into that trap of, like, taking an article and, in order to enhance the thumbnail and the title for them to click on your things, creating a very polarizing...
Well, I think if I was, like, doing YouTube the proper way, if I was Mr. Beastifying my channel, that's probably what I would do. You know, like, that would be the way. And there's an argument to be made that, if you get more people actually watching the video, then that's actually net better. But I personally feel uncomfortable doing it. So I've just said that I refuse to do that, basically.
A lot of people just skim headlines, and that is the news that they...
Yeah. Mm.
Digest.
The truth resists simplicity is the problem.
Yeah. Quote, I think, people want simple answers. People want yes or no's, or
we're not built for this.
They want two categories to go, or teams in some cases. It's just, well, I'll just be on this team, so whatever they say, I'll just follow everything they do.
I was built to live in a group of 100 people gathering berries.
Yeah.
I was not built to try and deal with ecological collapse on a global scale, you know?
Yeah. We need to get the aliens back in to do an update.
Yeah, devs, come on.
Aliens though, right?
Oh, well, it'd be silly not to. They're out there somewhere.
Mathematically, it makes sense.
Yeah, Fermi equation, people. Look it up. Drake equation. Shit, it's a Drake
Fermi
equation.
Fermi paradox. Breaking through various...
The great filter.
Filters, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Fermi equation.
In fact, Drake, I was going to say, didn't the Fermi nice. Paradox suggest that there isn't other aliens? Or if there are...
It's the fact that they should be, if you like do the numbers, and it's like, why haven't we heard from them?
Yeah.
That's the paradox.
And that's a suggestion that, yeah...
Why haven't we seen
it? But it might be that there's a massive filter. That's a great filter idea that, like, maybe...
You reach a certain point.
By the time you get to the point where you could contact other races, you make yourself extinct.
Yeah. Self-destructive,
Either we're, like, so intelligent, there's nothing else. Or we're so stupid that we just can't understand all these signals that are coming at us, so we just don't know how to read.
Or we could just be the first intelligent life in the universe. Like, we could be the Eldar in Warhammer, or the old ones.
It feels very narcissistic to assume such a thing.
Just assume,
when you consider how vast it all is and you see all this stuff.
We're
coming
the only
from the
species with like a Guy Fieri. Like, that must make us special.
Exactly.
Right? Well, hold on, infinite monkeys, infinite typewriters. There's got to be an alien Fieri out there, right? Like, as in, like, the universe is always expanding. Eventually, it's going to expand and create a Guy Fieri with four arms.
If that Gary guy couldn't, that genius.
Bland forest.
Yeah.
If that genius that died in a bag in his bathtub can find his DNA equivalent from the job he did and then bait and switch him on planet Earth itself.
Sorry, we're back on the twin theory, aren't
we? Yeah. The twin theory.
He found his DNA twin, even if he didn't have a twin, he found it because of the job he was in. He had NSA, right? He could access everybody.
He did have NSA,
found his DNA equivalent and ended up putting him in a bathtub so he could...
That's got to suck, though. He spent his
That must mean there's an alien Guy Fieri.
What if that's how you time travel?
I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Like, what if that's how you time travel?
The alcohol makes it all bearable.
Well, exactly. Like, he spent his entire youth just doing this intense course. Fast tracking it as well.
And then bam, dead in the bag. Dead in the bag of 23. Yeah, but what just send a trot? Like, what if it turns out this is the way to jump realities?
If you know, like,
as in, I'm going to go to the different dimension. I'm going to get this, put myself in a bag. And as long as nobody works out how you died, you stay in that reality.
You're
but as soon as they
to
work
leave
out,
any of your own DNA outside this bag.
Yeah. The bag is like a warp bubble. You've got to be naked, like the Terminator. I think we cracked a case.
Holy shit!
He's been jumping realities.
Did it mention how jacked this guy was?
Not very. He's quite lithe.
Oh, okay.
Well, he fit into a bag.
He's the T-1000.
Bear in mind.
The newer models were more lithe, weren't they?
Yeah. He's all about the brain. Maybe did they check that his brain was still there?
Yeah.
Because what if his brain ran away? Like, what if we don't know?
What do you mean? How
we don't know?
Ran away.
That's it. You're now making me think whether the Terminator design team had a meeting after the T-800. Is it the T-800? Is Arnold? Or is it the 400?
T-400.
Is it 400? After that, they were like, okay, I think we went a bit heavy on the muscle.
Yeah.
I think, can we maybe dial that back a bit? Did they have a mood board? Where they were this is what we want the Terminator to feel.
This is a lot of
that
resources.
Was from the future. Maybe they imagine.
What about
imagine everyone was big in the future. Or is it just that that's what a
right
soldier
out of the
should
ball.
Be?
Liquid.
What, robots?
Any shape.
It's weird. It's funny how we have these.
Why should they be humanoid?
Robots shouldn't be humanoid.
No, you think that's inefficient. There's probably a better way.
Yeah.
Problem
the
is
Boston
with robots,
Dynamics
right?
I was robots.
Talking about this last night. If we get robots to fight all our wars, it then just becomes a resource war instead. Because as soon as you run out of the resources to build your robots, your country is now dead and you will die of famine anyway. Because you've used all the resources to build the robots.
That's a Voyager episode, Star Trek Voyager episode.
Yeah,
where it's two alien races that basically do that, but they both go extinct and these robots are just forever fighting each other and trying to get
the
resources
filter,
to keep it going.
Guys. The great filter, guys.
Seriously, sci-fi, it's a very useful breeding ground for futurology.
We just need belter loaders.
Belter loaders, we need
up in space mining asteroids.
Well, so Delta. They're second class citizens that live in space give us our resources.
Yeah,
Trot, I think
I don't recognize
you've rediscovered
that
colonialism
system.
Again. Guys, we need to get past colonialism for God's sake.
Shit.
All right, hey, those moons didn't have any flags on them.
Nah.
We need a solid Dyson sphere. That's what we need.
Yeah,
endless supply from our sun.
Yeah, we're never going to get there if we don't stop poisoning ourselves.
True. That.
That's the problem. This is all the dreams, all the great things we could do, all the sci-fi you've seen on TV. It could become a reality if we just start
the
agreeing.
Good ones, like Star Trek.
We should stop filling the air with poison.
Not the dystopic sci-fi.
Yeah, we're going to be okay.
Not the dystopic.
I breathe through my hands when I'm outside.
That's just because of the parts. The parts, yeah.
Gravel, I can
the
very...
The particulate matter.
Yeah, that's P5.
That's 2.4.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah. Hold on, add a finger.
God made a human hand for a reason.
He did.
The filled of my mouth.
And he made bananas to feed me and hands...
Certified Republican moment.
Yeah, yeah. Bananas to feed me, hands to protect me from the poison air. God serves. And it's like the lady, like the blind lady of justice, but it's a banana and a cupped hand. Like,
it fits perfectly in my hand.
Yeah, yeah.
God made it this way.
Anyway, well, you know, the world's gone fucking mental. Thanks for joining us, Doc Simon.
I feel like we didn't get to the bottom of very much today.
No, we never do. And I don't think anyone should expect the bottom. It's an ongoing process. We're always in transition, and hopefully that's a transition towards a better world and not one where I have to suck up people's farts.
That's, yeah, important.
I don't want to do that anymore.
It's a great system that's, like, easy.
Data transfer through aerosol, is it possible? That was the thing I wanted to answer on.
I mean, in a sense, yes.
In an air mix, could it ever be understood, or is it always going to jumble things?
Oh, yeah, you'd have to... Oh, God, you'd have to do a convolution of the different... Yeah.
What if you could perfectly map all of the movements?
You need to read it.
So you fire the data via an aerosol. I don't know why you'd have to do this, because obviously we have...
That's insane.
So I'm firing data as an aerosol. What if I had, like, perfect scan of the entire volume of the air that data moves through, and then we can use AI to work out how that information should have been assembled and gives you like a best guess? Or is the AI then just imagining what the data is at that point?
You could do a spectroscopic analysis. You could work out what the compounds in it are. You could, if you wanted to be really clever about it, you could engineer a specific molecule that had like a specific absorption spectrum.
Yeah, that's right. What I was thinking.
So it absorbs photons at these specific frequencies that you tune to correspond with like an alphabet. So you say that it's missing, it's got absorption gaps at these wavelengths, those wavelengths correspond to these letters.
Okay. And then here's a storyline. Secret spy has to encode a load of data into a pill that he swallows. When he gets home, he farts into your spectrometer. and this coded information, this coded methodology you've created.
There's a double agent who's then also farting in the same room. Just trying to muddy the waters.
It's, what's it called though, when you have
it's not Chinese whispers, it's kind of like Chinese farting.
They're just down in the lobby just eating broccoli.
I got a message to send. You've got to speed this up.
What do they call false information in wartime when you like try and counter propaganda people? Oh, it's misinformation?
God.
Well, it's like counter-espionage. It's
counter-espionage, sabotage.
Yeah, it's where you try and like jumble up the information through farting in the same room as the guy that's farting out a very delicately coded
message.
Just
giving
the links. Okay, you ready? They come in the room like, I'm ready to go,
Wait, don't do it. Someone's spraying into Links Africa in here. Yeah. No,
it's jumbling the mix. Yeah. I'm about to fart plans for a nuclear reactor. Oh, God.
Is there a level of fart in particular that we have to worry about quantum physics? Where certain particles may or may not
pop in and out of this reality.
Yeah, they're always one down zero. It doesn't smell fine. Until you don't know if it smells
muons.
Or not.
They're called muons. The ones that like are there and not there and not. They found it when they vacuum outed. There was an experiment done where they removed all of the matter from within a vacuum chamber.
Yeah.
But then they were still able to measure something going on, but it was particles popping in and out of existence.
Yeah, like a quantum foam kind of thing. Yeah, you get particles that will appear and they're anti-particle also.
Yeah, I think that's what Trot's trying to get at here. Like, do we need to worry about farts from other dimensions?
I just worry about the data corruption.
Interdimensional
farting.
You know, when you get invited on podcasts, I normally have an idea, roughly.
No, what to expect.
No, not in this
no
one.
No one expects interdimensional farts.
And you still don't.
I still
don't know where it's going to go.
This conversation feels like ragdolling down a mountain in Skyrim.
Yeah, I'm sorry, because like, I think you're trying to give us really good, and you've given us some really, really good answers. But as soon as one of us sees an opportunity to chuck like another stupid variable on the question, we're like, yeah, now what if we did this? You know, this is quite a nice thing for us because none of us are experts in most of the things we talk about.
No.
I don't know, you said you're not an expert in everything, but you can give a best guess. But even if you're presented as an expert, we then just throw things off of you and just be like, come on, give us a good answer.
These ideas feel off at a weird angle.
Yeah.
Ideas feel more at home in like a writer's room for like a sci-fi comedy.
Maybe that's what we should be doing.
Which I think maybe that is what we should be doing.
We could be turning it into
Big Bang did well, although we wouldn't be writing a Big Bang.
No, there'd be your version of Rick and Morty would be even more fucked.
Yeah, it's not that clever, is it, to just go more fucked the more it exists.
Hey, it's working out for some authors.
It is.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Simon Clark,
for
joining us on this podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we find your work?
So you can find me on YouTube. I'm Simon Clark. I'm hopefully going to be doing some streaming soon back on Twitch, Dr. Simon Clark. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with baby, it's been a bit difficult.
Fresh dad.
And then, something else I should mention is, well, wrote a book, if you want to read that, called cool. Firmament.
The Firmament. Firmament,
yeah. And there's a podcast that I launched last year, the season two coming out this year, called How to Make a Science Video, where I talked to different science creators. We talked to Hank Green this season. We're talking to Electro Boom, some really big creators about their process. So if you find like that science side of YouTube interesting, go and check it out. There's a whole all of season one's available now. I'm not sure when season two's out.
For the betterment of humanity, you owe it to yourself to get educated by Dr. Simon Clark.
Well, I'm not going to put it in those terms, but you can.
I did.
It's
genuinely well produced.
You need
content.
A hype man so you can stay humble. You get best of both worlds.
Yeah, again, it's like a medieval court. I want the hype guy.
You want
a Paul
Bettany. You want Paul Bettany. You
yes.
Know?
Like yeah, exactly.
My noble kings and queens, I present to you the Lord of Atmospherics, the King of Queeps.
Specifically over the Arctic.
Yeah.
Sorry about him.
I should just know about specifically
the master of the atmosphere.
Yeah. Everything.
Anyway, yeah, thanks very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. And thank you again to all of our members, Patreons, Twitch subscribers that are watching live right now as well. Thank you for supporting us. As Simon has found out recently, your direct support makes a huge difference for allowing us to keep producing the kind of content we make. He's making stuff that's a lot higher brow.
There's actually a point to his stuff.
I'd definitely say there's a point to yours.
Ours is very much just three idiots.
I know how to manage a medieval village.
Do we really know?
People keep leaving. Really, they'd be dying. Is what they would be doing in the reality.
They're walking into just a forest.
Walk off into the mist.
Fine.
The best thing is we can both live in a beautiful ecosystem where we don't compete.
Yes, yeah, wonderful. True, yeah.
It's lovely, isn't
it? Of course it is, yeah.
But we can also cross-pollinate like this.
Oh, of course.
Which is lovely.
Wow. Although we can't really offer much intellectual knowledge on your channel.
Well, it sparked off some ideas for me. Maybe some fart-related
content. I want to look into the aerosol thing. Look into it. I mean, that's,
this is what people are thinking about. Average non-scientists are thinking about aerosol data.
Yeah.
Okay,
By the way, we are very aware of how bad the idea of an aerosol as a way to transmit data is.
You're kind of making me think that. If I ever write sci-fi, I might have to put that in.
Yeah, yeah. Memory gas.
Okay.
Now everyone in the room knows how to dance.
That's like the Matrix. You have to breathe in a fart.
It's an upload.
Or someone tries to sell like Hitler's farts in a can. My God, it is. Smelling history.
I'm having some pretty good ideas. Weird. I mean, bad ideas.
Bad ideas.
Well, thank you for joining us. That is all we got time for today.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week. Go check out Dr. Simon Clark's stuff.
Indeed.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.